Start recording. Today is March 11th, 2018. My name is Jay Leesk, and you're listening to the Speed of Technology podcast.
Hey, and this is Craig Jenke. I'm here with Jay for the On the Spot podcast.
Jesus Christ, you don't go on the fly well.
Well, I'll tell you why I don't go on the fly well. Twice we opened it with talking. You said, once you said on the spot, so then I called it the Speed of Technology podcast. Then you switched it and you said Speed of Technology. You talk about the Speed of Technology and you didn't say podcast. And then you said Speed of Technology podcast and I didn't know where to go with it.
Good morning. Today is March 11th, 2018. My name is Jay Leesk, and you're listening to the Speed of Technology.
Hey, this is Craig Jenke. I'm here with Jay on the Spot podcast. Last week, we talked about cloud readiness. Today, I think we're going to talk about migration. And with the cloud readiness assessment, we decided we were going to go to the cloud. We picked a provider. Now we're ready to go. Is that right, Jay?
Well, just as a quick review, last week we discussed what we want to use. For example, you want to go to Azure IaaS for all your needs, or you want to go to Microsoft Office 365 Software as a Service. You know you want the commercial or the government edition. You've made all these decisions, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, go give a quick listen to last week's episode to kind of get a better feel for all of those things. So now it's just click and go.
Yeah, I think that's right. Everything just, you know, you pick your environment. There's little wizards. You pick where you're going to go. And yeah, you just click it. Now, unfortunately, it's not that easy. Usually we try to break things up into a plan, right? Yeah. We like to, at AvPoint, have a discovery section where we discover what we're going to do, do some kind of assessment on what we find. And then, you know, we ideally test that out and follow that up with like a full execution. So a lot of phases there.
Yeah, there's definitely some things you want to plan for. So I think the first thing you really need to decide is this is no longer the era of moving everything at once. If you're, for the sake of argument, let's say you're moving to Office 365. Office 365 has a lot of tools for you to choose from. Are you moving your email first? Are you going to move your files? What about your collaboration tool, like if you use SharePoint? Are you going to move that first? You have to make a decision of what is the easiest bang for your buck, the lowest hanging fruit, the thing that you can knock out first to show success so that the people who are writing the check are willing to come back to you and say, all right, go to stage two. Because if you try and do it all at once, I mean, you're talking about multiple years and it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's interesting that you say writing the check, right? Because that's always the interesting part about doing the migration. Because ideally, as an IT professional, we want to be up on the newest and latest great systems to take advantage of any new features that come out. And then when you're trying to sell that to the business, they don't always see that. Once you make that sale, then you got to kind of just go look through your data and see what you want to move. You know, is it good data? Is it bad data? Is it old data? You know, we only really want to move the stuff that's going to have future benefit for us.
So the big term that's talked about a lot in migration is ROT, redundant, obsolete, and trivial data. The other term that we use a lot is dark data. Following the 80-20 rule, and that may be scientific, that may be just simply following the 80-20 rule, we have come to the realization that 10 to 20% of your data is what you know you have. It's your project work. It's your proposals. It's your contracts. You know that data exists. The other 80 to 90% of your data, you have no idea what it is. It could be lunch menus from the 90s. It could be someone's DVD collection, quote unquote, backed up so that it doesn't get lost. It could be a very large MP3 collection because your network is from the 90s. And well, back in the 90s, we used to, well, not me, of course, but people used to download their music to their work file and put it in their personal drive. And that way they would have access to it at all times.
Yeah. So you got to run scans against that data. And that in itself can be an ordeal if you have a lot of it. I mean, we talk to customers all the time that have terabytes and petabytes worth of data, you know, it takes a long time to scan that data. And you've got to write, either use a tool or write some pretty good scripts to scan it and export that information and put it into CSV files or something that you can then run reports on and see what you have.
The other thing you might be looking for is, what type of data do I have that is in that 10 to 20%? Do I have classified information that I don't want to go to the cloud? Or if it goes to the cloud, I want it to be really well locked down. There is a public sector consulting firm that, when they moved to the cloud and they moved to Office 365, they didn't really do much in the way of data analysis. And a couple weeks in, they got a phone call from one of their principals, and the principal was freaking out because their compensation plan was publicly accessible. Well, there are tools like Office Graph and Delve, which show you, hey, this person that you're doing work with has these files shared. And well, when you and them and then this third person all, when I look at all three of you, you all might be interested in this document over here, even though you've never looked at it. It's a really useful tool until you realize that your data is not secured properly and that compensation plan is available for all of the underlings to see.
Yeah, no, I've seen that. I've heard examples like that, especially, you know, I've seen in sales organizations where the admin or other people keep their, you know, all their receipts and the things that they use to do expenses with. So I've seen files where it just had a list of every salesperson with the corporate card, credit card number, right? Which, if somebody found, could be horrible for a business, doing all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we really want to make sure that we're putting safe and secure data when we move it. The other thing we want to think about is who might be using the system, right? Who are your stakeholders and what, how are they going to use the system? What training do they need? What kind of new things will be important to them? And how do we get them on board? Because, you know, really ROI and any kind of move like this and system that you do have is how much you're going to use it once you get there.
Absolutely. So whenever we are working a migration project with one of our customers, the first thing we do is talk to them about who their stakeholders are. It's one thing to help them understand the broader sense. Who are your stakeholders? Who are your customers? And that is pretty much the entirety of the business. But then to help them understand the value of engaging those stakeholders, so creating some sort of a stakeholder group where you interact with these people on a regular basis, you make them part of the migration process, you find out what business problems do you have today, because if you don't figure that out, you're just going to end up moving those business problems to your new platform, and you're not really solving any problems for them. You might be saving a few bucks on infrastructure or skill set that you need to keep everything going, but are you solving anything for them, or are you just making them learn a whole new system?
Yeah, it's actually interesting because Tony Robbins, I like to listen to self-development stuff all the time. He has a line in there, when you go from relationship to relationship, the one thing that you do is you bring you with you, right? So you bring all your bad habits and stuff, and you don't want to bring that to a new system and make your users just not unhappy, because ideally you want to bring them to a new system that works better and they're willing to change for that. And you want to involve them and get their input so that they buy into it.
If you have a small stakeholder group that represents, you know, 1% of your overall organization, if you can get them to buy into it, then when they start using it and sharing information about it, people that there are in their circles will start growing, and it grows exponentially from there.
Yeah, we keep talking about super users. So you want to look for those guys and office champions who will go out and promote the changes and help you really drive it in the organization.
In addition to trying to solve their business problems, you also need to find out what's important to them. So let's say you have a marketing representative on this project. Well, what, from a marketing perspective, do they care if the new system is branded in a certain way for them? Do they understand the branding capabilities of the new system? Do the end users want, you know, a Facebook-like tool for communications? And what are their expectations or desires from an information architecture perspective? I guarantee you they don't know what information architecture is, but they know what a navigation structure is. So do they care if it goes by department or by capability? These are things that you really need to find out. And when you're doing a migration, that's the easiest time to do it.
Yeah, I like the information architecture that you referenced that, because I was just talking to a customer the other day. They want to move from Office 365 because the search doesn't work good enough and they can't find anything. And I'm going, well, moving on-premises to SharePoint 2016 isn't going to fix that. Their thought was they would have more ability to customize things. And I'm like, that's your information architecture. If you can't find it, it's not because it's not there. It's you don't have it laid out well enough. And ideally, search should be the last place you're going to find stuff, right? It should be navigation. I should be able to just go into my system and say, oh yeah, it's here, here, and here. And if I get more than three clicks into something and I can't find it, that's a bad thing, right? So I need to organize my content better. But you need to plan all that out so that, you know, it's there when you get there. You don't want to figure it out when users can't find it.
That's right. So finishing up our discovery phase, the other two things that you want to talk to stakeholders about are what can they expect? You know, we're doing a migration to Office 365. We're going to move your email first. What's going to change on your end is the mappings for your Outlook app on your phone. And we'll help push that out, no problem. Phase two, we're going to move your collaboration system. So SharePoint's going to change. So when that moves, you're going to get a whole new interface, and you're going to get the following new capabilities. And we're going to remove this capability because we found that it actually slows the system down and it's not available in Office 365. So you have to help them understand what can they expect, and you have to help create a communications plan with them, not for them. Now, frankly, again, you're working on a subset of stakeholders. You want these people to be your champions. They need to be part of helping you design that communications plan so that they are behind what you're doing. I've been doing this for at least a decade now of change management, process management. If you can get them to help design that, you're going to be so much more successful.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's so many people that leave communication plans until they're running the pilot, right, and executing, and then they think, oh, now we got to train users. So getting out in front of that as early as possible greatly increases your chances to succeed.
So let's move into the assessment phase. We talked a little bit about it when we were talking about why you're scanning your data. We're trying to figure out what kind of content do we have. Do you have redundant, obsolete, trivial data? Do you have sensitive content? Craig, I like the phrase you used in there, OPD, other people's data. What else are you looking for?
So you alluded to a little bit Netflix collections, MP3s collections, but you know, as a person who works a lot, and you know, and sometimes I see people do this, not necessarily me, but they mix their personal communications in through the course of the day, because a lot of times you got to do stuff when other businesses are open, right? So I have found people that have put their mortgage applications in there, their health information and their doctor's notices, insurance claim forms, and things that they got to do during normal courses of business that they don't do. They'll scan it, they'll keep it. So you don't want to move that one because it's not your data. You know, it has nothing to do with your business, but two, a lot of that types of data, again, contains personal information like credit card numbers, social security numbers, and things like that, that you really don't want to move.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And the other thing you're trying to figure out, so when you're looking at all this content, well, now that we've found, let's say we moved all the OPD, the other people's data, let's say we look at all the rot and we've decided anything older than 5 years, we don't care about. Anything between 5 and 7 years that's marked financial, we're going to archive it. These project sites, we want to move to this area. These contracts, we want to move to this area. Anything that was marked PII needs to get put into a special library that only HR has access to. Long story short, what we've moved into is from a standard lift and shift migration to a reorganization of content. Well, when you're talking about reorganization of content, what's the easiest way to do that? Am I going to write custom scripts? Am I going to use a third-party tool to move it, and then once it's in the new system, rearrange it? Is there a tool out there, by the way, the answer is yes, that lets me filter content based on metadata and create migration plans to move it from the source to the destination in the right organization? So there's all sorts of stuff around that that you can do.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, but some of that takes time, right? So we now need to lay out a timeline of what we want to move and when we do it, you know, what we're going to move and when we want to do it. So typically, I recommend that we move small, easy to move stuff first to get an idea of how difficult our migration is going to be. And then we'll get into that as kind of piloting it and then picking out the things that are more important to move after that. The business critical stuff, right? We want to make sure that we get everything down first before the critical. And based on the size of our data, we want to have a reasonable timeline so we can schedule out resources and stuff for how long that's going to take. So, you know, start some planning on that. Realize that you just can't move. You know, I have customers that come to us and say, oh, you know, we have 4 terabytes of data. and we need to move this by the end of the month because that's when our box or our Dropbox license expire, and we want to move it into Office 365 so we can take advantage of some savings there.
The other thing that you need to think about is timeline. So during the assessment, this is when you're going to start gut checking that 3-month timeline your leadership gave you. A lot of these migration projects, we're told you need to move to Office 365 or you need to move to the cloud and you need to do it by March 31st. Well, now that I've done the assessment, I've spoken to the stakeholders and identified their requirements. I've figured out what content can and can't go. Now you can push back to leadership and say with an educated opinion, not just random thoughts, hey, it's not going to be done in that time. Here's why. But here's what I can get done in that time. And you can work with leadership to make sure that you're hitting what's really important to them, but you're giving them an educated response as to why you need to move forward the way you're moving forward.
And one thing that you really need to consider about, a lot of times people go from really old technologies to newer technologies, like to SharePoint 20, not really old, but they'll go from SharePoint 2013 to Office 365. And that's not really a huge deal. It takes time if you have a lot of data, but I still have customers that are going from SharePoint 2003, SharePoint 2007, right? And that takes a little bit more effort because we may have to upgrade our technology to something newer before we can actually move it to Office 365. Especially if we're using tools, a lot of tools don't go back that far to go to Office 365. So we may have to do like a stepping stone process to get to Office 365 and not, as we've talked to before, just be able to pick it up from
absolutely.
Where it is.
There's some,
and shift
some
it
thoughts
into
with
the
regard
cloud.
To the technology that you have to consider. And that's a great example. The other thing that, again, we talked about it with stakeholder engagement. Let's continue this down the thread. In the assessment phase, if you come up with a plan, part of what you've discovered with your stakeholders is, well, what do they care about? So now you need to think about, from a user adoption perspective, which is the right group to move first? Which of their content is the right content to move first? And if you're going to do a staggered migration, how is that going to affect how they use the system? How am I going to enable them to be successful without making them log into 4 different systems, 3 different ways, using 2 different methods? Like, it just, you have to consider their steps if you're going to be successful there.
Yeah, because we always say the more complex you make a process, the least likely your users are to use it, right? So if I can do, if I have to do something and it takes me 4 or 5 steps to do it, I'm going to go outside the normal system and find an easier way to do it. So if you're in the process of this type of like a hybrid migration, as you said, where it's in 2 or 3 places, I may just start using Dropbox or just email instead of waiting for the new system. And then I am going to be less likely to want to be trained on the new system because I'm just going to go with the systems that I've created and work from there.
So whenever I talk about pilots with my customer, the first thing I try to make clear is we are talking about creating a small utilizing a small representation of their data to do a couple things. We want to validate the assumptions we've made in our migration plan. When we move content using filters, does it move the way we expect it to? We want to validate connectivity and the effect it has on network. Great example here is we have a customer who in 2017 did a pilot migration with us. All they did was the discovery, assessment, and pilot. And what we found during the pilot, they were moving from SharePoint 2010 on-premises to SharePoint Online. What we found with them was their network connectivity was really bad. They simply didn't have good connection speeds. But the other thing we found was that their single server SharePoint farm, where SQL and the web front ends and the application servers were all on the same 4 gigabyte server, did not have the ability to handle the migration process and the everyday workload at the same time. So for them, by doing the pilot, we found out that one, in order to move their content in a timely manner, we weren't going to be able to count on the standard move it over your DSL line process. And two, you want to make sure that we beef up their server to be able to handle the workload. So we're actually, for them, we're going to build a new SharePoint 2010 server that's going to handle all of the migration workload, pushing that workload on their primary server so they can continue to do their job. The other thing we talked about them is, what options do the cloud providers have? For the 1.5 terabytes of content they have, they can drive ship it. literally take a backup of their content, send it to Microsoft. Microsoft, within a couple of weeks, will get it uploaded into SharePoint. And now we just have to do an iteration, an incremental, that is, pull the data that's changed since that backup and move that. And now we're talking about a couple gig of the total terabyte and a half. So there are a lot of options you need to consider, and that you're validating during the pilot.
Yeah, and just because you might have a big pipeline to the cloud doesn't necessarily mean that the cloud is willing to take it at that speed too, because a lot of the cloud providers will have throttling limits, and you can't exceed those unless you reach out and talk to them and maybe go negotiate something with them to let them know. But if you just turn on the fire hose, for example, without actually giving them any heads up, they're going to throttle that, and there's only a limit of so much stuff that you can move at any one time. So you want to be preparing for that.
Yeah, when you're moving into a multi-tenant system where multiple customers are in there, it's the cloud provider's job to slow you down a little bit to make sure you aren't killing the processes of the other customers in your system. And that's absolutely a really good point.
The other thing that you might find if you're moving to something like SharePoint is that you have solutions or branding or something like that that in theory should have just transferred, but they don't necessarily do. So this is an opportunity to find like workflows and things that might break and fix them and have a solution for fixing them and remediating issues now, so that you know how to handle them when you make your full execution.
Yeah, when we do migration as a service projects for our customers, our pilot will have 1 to 2 to 3 iterations depending on, you know, the level of service they're looking for. And what we're doing is we're validating those assumptions, making modifications, running the test again, and really trying to streamline the process to make sure that the communications are very clear. What can you expect? How is it going to happen? What's the timeline going to be?
But I would say one thing that we were remiss in talking about is having your end users test your pilot, right? So again, we talk about user adoption is so important to getting ROI on any system. That's when you want to do your pilot testing, right? And go through and have people look at it and go, is this really going to work as a solution? And make any of those changes that you need to make too.
You're right. You have to have a plan for user acceptance testing. One of the things AvePoint does is we validate the number of files and size, but you also want to have user acceptance testing. Well, let's say you changed your information architecture as part of this migration. So you moved content. It used to be in group A. Now group A is split over groups A, B, and C. User acceptance testing is the best way to make sure it did what you expected.
Now, I know industry best practices is to do production acceptance testing and wait until you move everything, but we truly try to, or at least that's what I've seen it be. We really try to encourage testing all along the way and make sure that your users know what they're getting when they get there.
Speaking of when they get there, so you have a couple of different options. You can move it all at once. I mentioned the drive ship out to the cloud. That's going to be an all-at-once kind of thing. You move everything, you're good. You can move things over a series of maintenance windows. With that customer in South America, that was their first gut idea was, all right, well, we'll move a little bit each week during the maintenance window. And then people are already expecting that. I'm like, sure, let's do the math on that one. Based on your speed to the cloud and the amount of content you have, that's going to take 3 months. Are you comfortable with that? All right, well, maybe that's not as good an idea for this particular customer. You can move things behind the scenes. So you're moving a bunch of content, you're putting it into a system nobody has access to, and then you do what we call an incremental migration, a last check. You do everything that's changed from when it was originally migrated to that last moment before you want users to get into the system, you do that, and then you switch everyone over. So you have a bunch of different options there.
Yeah, and a lot of that might depend on other things, right? Because one of the clients that I'm working with recently, it's just an Exchange migration. So we're moving from Exchange on-premises to Exchange online, about 20,000 users. You know, how do we want to do that? Well, it can't be all at once because Microsoft's best practice is only moving a couple thousand as a cutover. So you got to set up a hybrid and pick the way that you're going to do that. Now, you probably could do quite a bit at a time, but internally, they decided that they only want to move about 250 to 300 users, which seems low and like it would take a lot of times, but it's an acquisition. So we're acquiring a new company. We're bringing MM into our organization. Still not a big deal until we decided that, hey, we're going to give everybody new laptops and new hardware, new desktops, and we're going to have to provision those. our IT team can't provision more than 250 in a week. So, you know, there's other considerations you need to take into consideration on how you're moving. How fast can you get users transferred over to the new system? It might not just be going in and changing their permissions or changing their login information. You might be giving them new equipment, in which case that's going to really take a long time.
Yeah, I think one of the things you're really hitting home on, Craig, is sometimes even though you have the skill set to do it yourself, you may not have the time to do it yourself. And that's where a partner that can help you maybe work with you on it while you're provisioning the hardware and the accounts and doing a part of the migration, they can partner to do the other part of the migration.
So what I hate to steal from another industry and another commercial that I've seen, but I like to think of Farmers Insurance. I don't know if you see the commercials, you get that where you're at in Washington, D.C., but their tagline is, we've seen a thing or we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two, right? And I think, you know, in all the migrations that we've done at AvePoint and as, you know, in our previous careers at different consulting agencies, not just us, but, you know, the organizations we worked with have seen a lot of things that a lot of people wouldn't think that what could happen during the course of a migration. And most organizations are only doing migrations of this sort once every 3 to 5 years, if they're doing them that fast. And a lot of them only do it every 10 years. So there's a lot of considerations, a lot of hiccups that can come along the way that you, even though you have really highly skilled people, it might not be things that they're used to seeing. And a lot of times they're also got other jobs that they have to do, right? They have their day jobs and the migration might just be part of that. So, you know, making sure that you have the right people in the right place with the right bandwidth to do this kind of job really becomes challenging for some organizations. And as you said, when they might want to look for a third partner to either help them or a tool or something like that.
So Craig, continuing down that process, we talked about it in the pilot, validate and remedy solutions. You want to do that here too. Just because you've completed the migration doesn't mean it was successful. So you have to not just do a content validation, 1,000 files to 1,000 files, but especially if you're doing any kind of reorganization, user acceptance testing. And that stakeholder group that we've talked about is going to be the first step in making sure you're going to get user acceptance when you roll this out.
Yeah, and with the pilot, you're only doing a small subset of the organization. Right now, you're moving everything, so you have more potential issues that can come up and need to be remediated. But again, it's making sure everything got moved. You're 100 gigs to 100 gigs and people can find it and it works where they click it. It's where they expect it to be. And kind of that seamless transition that you want, you know, that your users start from day one knowing how to use their system. And it might take them a little bit of to ramp up, but you want a very quick ramp up and get them using it as soon as possible.
And then let's talk about the users. So whenever we do migration as a service, we make sure our customers are thinking about training. If you're moving from SharePoint 2013 to Office 365 and SharePoint Online, what new features are your users going to get? They're going to get groups. They're going to get teams. They're going to get planner. What kind of information do you have prepared so that when they jump into Office 365 for the first time, they don't lose a week down the dark hole of new features? Microsoft has created a lot of materials. For example, if you go to successwithteams.com, www.successwithteams.com, there's a whole series of things that you can push out to your users to help them be successful. But maybe you need a training partner, someone who can help you create things that are specific to your organization. Now, I don't do training, but our public sector CTO, it is a former training person. And so there are a lot of things that you can do that you have to do to make sure they're successful.
Yeah. And, especially if you're doing like a reorganization, what we do for a lot of clients is add or talk them into adding a site for training, for help, a really good one where you can kind of go and say, especially like for something like Office 365, where do I go for Teams? What do I do if I want to add a new document and just create a help section for specific needs for people to use with big icons that let them know what they're trying to do and little tutorials. So, you know, as much help as you can give them to do the things themselves so that they don't have to keep filing help desk tickets to say, how do I move a file? How do I copy a file? How do I send it to somebody? Right. You can have those are all over the internet. for you to be able to gather. And there's actually some pretty cool online training tools that you can just filter, you can just plug right into Office 365 that help people to figure out what they want to do.
Once you're there, how do you make sure all of the old problems that you had in the previous system don't perpetuate themselves in the new one? Traditionally in SharePoint, you have problems called SharePoint sprawl or site sprawl or content sprawl. Well, if you want to avoid that, you have to build a set of processes in the new system that not just restrict what users can do, but then enables them to do what they need to be successful.
Yeah, no, we have some great tools that basically allow users to make requests. And then on the back end of that, you put in your policies and, you know, around the system, like a new site. So we do that a lot. It's through governance automation. I can go as a user, I can go in and say, fill out a form and say, I need a new site. I have a new project that I'm going to be working on. These people need to be involved in it. And this is the kind of content that we're going to create. You hit submit and it goes to an automated system that looks at who you are, what you want, and makes determinations based on that kind of thing to give you a new site. If you're a manager and it's a standard project and you need a standard project site, that might get approved automatically and just send a notification to IT to let them know that it happened. It'll show up in a report that they can run, you know, maybe weekly to see new sites generated, and you're good to go. If it's a low-level employee and he says, okay, I need a site that's externally facing because I want to share information with a third party, you know, that might get rejected outright or forwarded to IT so that they can get more information on what to do with that. You know, or I've seen other people where they say, well, I need a new publishing thing because I want to share a new publishing site because I want to share information to the entire organization. And that might get routed to somebody to contact them for marketing to make sure that they lay out things that are, you know, within corporate guidelines and help them create the best site that's appropriate for end users to find information.
Yeah, earlier I mentioned that this is no longer the age where you can simply kick off a huge project to migrate everything and we're, you know, 18 months later, you're done. You got to do it piece by piece. Well, the same thing goes for your end users and what they expect to be able to accomplish. This is no longer the day and age where you can simply cut them off from being able to do something because you will end up in a shadow IT situation where they're using an unapproved tool to manage their content and day-to-day work. Well, what happens when you do that? You're now open to lawsuits because you don't know where all your content is. You can't find it. You can't protect it. You can't be sure that that server in that IaaS system is protected so that when there's PII on there, you know how to handle it.
Well, and the other part of that, and we had this conversation offline, was what are we trying to do with that too? We want to take the burden off of IT. And what's interesting about that is IT really hates to give up control. They complain all the time about the end users requesting information, requesting new sites and all this, you know, and they're constantly in this firefighting mode. But, you know, we want to take the burden off IT as much as possible so that they can do things that are more strategic to the business and coming up with solutions that enable end users to do things that specifically drive business goals, which is increase sales and reduce costs. So we want to put that, we want to make them free up their time to do that and allow end users to do things more strategically and automate as systems as much as possible.
So Craig, let's try to wrap this up here. We talked about the discovery, assessment, pilot, and execution. The last thing we need to do is decide what do we do with the old system. We didn't move content, we migrated it. So there's still a copy of the content in the old system. And if we did do some kind of ROD analysis, we probably didn't migrate everything. So there's definitely a question of how much content did we leave behind? What if we missed a file that's really important? So how do you sunset that old system? A lot of our customers I see moving to like a 6-month archive process where the old system is in read-only mode for 6 months and then we flat out archive it off. But yeah, what kind of best practices have you seen around that?
Yeah, I've seen what you talked about. We'll just make it read-only, right? And then we only need to move it if somebody specifically goes looking for that. I've seen customers delete as much of that rot data as they could. They archive it out to file shares. So if they needed to find it or other disks and that kind of thing. So it basically, you know, it always falls on IT to maintain it and come up with a plan, but we only give people access to it as a need to only to access it. And a lot of times, you know, you can go that entire wait period and not have anybody request it, or it'll be just one person and luckily you can find it. But then you need to shut that off as soon as possible, because you don't want your end users going there. You want to go into the new system. And a lot of end users are going to go to the old system as long as you let them.
Yeah. The other thing that you haven't mentioned, is which has been very kind of you, is cost. So if you do leave that old system up for 6, 12, 18 months in read-only mode, what are you paying for licensing to keep it there? Do you have a license agreement that lets you do that at no cost? Great. Then that's kind of a model is appropriate. But if your license is up, expired, do you want to drop tens of thousands of dollars to keep that going for another 6 months? So you have to think of a means of archiving that data that allows you to get missing files if that's important to you, but that doesn't cost you a lot of extra money, because that was part of the point in moving to the cloud.
And that's so often that we hear the request to move to the cloud because, hey, we're using another provider like Dropbox or Box or, you know, that kind of thing, and we need to go there by this date because I want to be able to end those licenses. So, you know, you can get extensions on that, but you're right. It's just more money you're shoveling away into a black hole if you're not using it.
Now, we've been talking a while about moving your data. There's another option that you might consider. If you are not sure of what to do, but you want to get success in the cloud right away, while you're working on that discovery and assessment, you might take a new workload, a new process, something you don't have a solution for today, and put that in the cloud. So you can start to build interest and success on that new solution before you start trying to convince your tens of thousands of employees to prepare themselves for the cloud.
I've seen that a lot. I was just talking to a customer yesterday in Phoenix where that's what they're going to do, is a net new intranet system. And then once they get people using that, worry about bringing their old data up to the cloud. So that is a good approach. I mean, you want to get user adoption, you want ROI, you want people to be using it, and then making those requests to say, hey, I need the access to this data because I need this data here so I can do these workflows and that kind of thing. So really good approach is to just start using it and see where that goes. But you want to do that with a plan too. And I'm thinking that's a future podcast episode where we can talk about planning to get the most out of your Office 365 or cloud environment.
All right. Well, I think that was plenty of talking your ear off and listening to us talk. I'm curious, if you're listening to us, what are you thinking? What works for you? What have you tried and hasn't worked? So reach out to us via email, comment on the blog, Twitter, whatever is easiest for you. Reach out to us, let us know what you think, and we'll be happy to include your comments in our upcoming episodes.
All right, thanks for listening to us today. And now for something completely different. Don't forget to set your clocks ahead if you haven't already done so.
This episode brought to you by Jay Lees and Craig Denke, two guys who like to talk technology and live in a connected world. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers only, and in no way do they represent the opinions of their employers, their customers, or their wives. This has been an On the Spot podcast production.